Well, good morning again. This morning we come to the end of our series. Sometimes when we do a series, I wonder if people really know we're doing a series. But we have been running two series in parallel. And one of them, as we journey through Mark, has been looking at what happens when Jesus meets a whole range of people. So this morning is the last in our Jesus Meets series. And it's kind of like a bog-off. You kind of got Jesus meeting a stranger and Jesus meeting a centurion. So it's two for the price of one, a kind of end of season special. And our reading comes from Mark chapter 15, beginning at verse 21. A certain man from Cyrene called Simon, the father of Alexander and Rufus, was passing by on his way from the country. And they forced Simon to carry the cross. They brought Jesus to the place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. Then they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he didn't take it, and they crucified him. They divided up his clothes, they cast lots to see what each one of them would get. It was the third hour when they crucified him, and the written notice of charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." They crucified two robbers with him, one on his right and one on his left, and those who passed by held insults at him. They shook their heads and they said, "So, you who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, come down from the cross, save yourself." In the same way, the chief priests and the teachers of the law mocked Jesus amongst themselves. "He saved others," they said, "but he can't save himself. Let this Christ, this King of Israel, come down from the cross. Then we'll see and we'll believe." Those crucified with him also heaped insults on him. At the sixth hour, darkness came over the whole land until the ninth hour. And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" When some of those standing near heard this, they said, "Listen, he's calling out to Elijah." One man ran, filled a sponge with wine vinegar, put it on a stick, and offered it to Jesus to drink. "Now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to take him down," he said. With a loud cry, Jesus breathed his last. The curtain in the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And when the centurion who stood there in front of Jesus heard his cry and saw how he died, he said, "Surely this man was the Son of God." I wonder what your image of Jesus is. How do you like to see Jesus in your mind? How do you like to think of him? When we read the account of his life through Mark and all the people we met, we see a powerful Jesus. We see Jesus who turned water into wine. He made a banquet out of a few loaves and a couple of fishes. He healed the lame, he healed the blind. He even raised people from death to life. We see a powerful Jesus, an incredibly powerful Jesus, as all the power and authority given to him by God the Father was shown in his life as he walked amongst men on earth. Now, that's the kind of Jesus that we want in our life, isn't it? We want to believe in a powerful Jesus. We want to believe in a Jesus who can turn things on their head and can help us do things that we never imagined possible, even passing our A-levels and getting to Plymouth University. We want a Jesus who is a powerful, strong, and a mighty Jesus. Isn't that somebody we want in our life? But when we read of the things that he said, he was also a Jesus that upset people. He was also a Jesus who made people feel intensely uncomfortable, particularly if you were the sort of person that thought you had life in charge and everything worked out. He punctured the bubble of the pompous and the arrogant and the people who thought they had life all sorted out. He was a rebel Jesus. He challenged authority. He spoke up for those on the marginalized in society. He elevated the roles of women beyond what they were in the culture. At that time, he ate and he drank with sinners. He ate with the outcasts and he made friends with those on the margins of society. And in doing that, he upset the great and the powerful. That was a rebel Jesus. That's the kind of Jesus I like. When I put on my Che Guevara t-shirt and show that I'm sort of for the small guy and for the rebel, I tap in to that rebel Jesus. I like to be on the side of the underdog, and Jesus was on the side of the underdog. But this Jesus, this Jesus we meet in Mark 15, is this the kind of Jesus that we're comfortable with? This is a Jesus who was incredibly weak, incredibly vulnerable. He'd been tried twice. He'd been falsely accused. He'd been bound. He'd been whipped within an inch of his life. He'd been spat upon. He'd been humiliated. People were taunting at him even at his time of death. He was physically weak at this time. He was so broken and so vulnerable that he couldn't even carry his cross to his place of crucifixion. At this point, when we meet Jesus in Mark 15, he seems weak, vulnerable. It's as if the all-powerful has become totally powerless. So let's keep that in mind when we consider what happened next. So standing by amongst the many people who were there when Jesus was crucified, the people that mocked him, those people that were on the fringes and felt sad as they saw what was happening, one of the people there that day was a centurion. And a centurion is a military man. A centurion is a commander of 100 people within the Roman army. A centurion is somebody who was well drilled in the ways of the Roman army. He lived by strength and by power and by might. And this army had conquered most of known Europe at that time. Strength was power. They conquered Europe by crushing the weak and showing no mercy. And this man was part of a well-oiled, well-drilled military machine. Part of a dominant force. Somebody for whom might is right. Centurion was the kind of man who would honor somebody that died bravely. Somebody that put up a fight and was kind of like glorified in that brave kind of death. Somebody who had probably seen so many other people die by crucifixion and not given it a second thought. But on this day, this death of this man at this place causes centurion to have a life-changing revelation. Causes centurion to utter some words that would echo down through the pages of history. There was something in the way that Jesus died that drew the centurion to him. And I would suggest it wasn't the stuff about the veil being torn in two in the temple. I would suggest it's not even the stuff about the sky turning dark and everything in creation that was happening. I don't think that was what was drew the centurion to him. I think what drew this cry from the centurion was seeing a powerful God deliberately limit his power. A God who showed his love not by showing his power, but by showing his weakness and kindness. And it was that, I think, that drew the centurion to say those immortal words, "This is truly the Son of God." And there's a point here, isn't it, that the identity of Jesus, the very core of who he was, the Son of God, is inseparably linked to his death on the cross. It was his death on the cross that drew this recognition and this identity from the centurion. Now that statement today, maybe looking back over the pages of history and reading the Bible and reading all the stories, might seem inconsequential as something that just trips off of our lips. But for the centurion to say that at that time and in that place was a very risky thing to say. You see, the Romans believed in the plurality of gods, not one God. And in saying truly this was the Son of God, the centurion was elevating Jesus above all of the gods that the Romans worshipped at the time and above the Roman emperor himself. For the centurion to say truly this is the Son of God was to put the centurion in a place of high risk. It's something for which the centurion could easily have been crucified for himself. It seems a paradox, doesn't it? That at the very heart of Christian faith is Jesus, the Son of God, who showed his strength and power by becoming vulnerable and weak on the day of his crucifixion. That's a bit of a paradox, isn't it? But just a few hours before, a man called Simon had been forced to carry the cross of Jesus through the streets as Jesus had found that burden too much to carry. Simon was from Cyrene, an important city in what is now Libya. We're told he was a passerby. He was probably a Jew. He was probably in Jerusalem for the Passover. But as Jesus was walking through the streets, he was a bystander, somebody just watching events unfold before him. But this observer was drawn into one of the greatest days of history, not through his own choice, probably, he was asked to carry the cross. In many ways, Simon is a footnote, a point of detail. But it's very hard to read of Simon carrying his cross and not think of what Jesus said in Mark chapter 8. Then Jesus called the crowd to him, along with his disciples, and said, "If anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for me and the gospel will save it." Who knows? Who knows if anybody watching Jesus and then Simon struggle through the streets with that cross had any of those words of Jesus from earlier on in his ministry in their minds? Maybe a few did, maybe none did. But for us today, it's hard not to read about Simon carrying the cross of Jesus and not think of these words of Jesus in Mark 8. It's not easy to acknowledge Jesus as the Son of God and to follow him. Far from it. It's very easy to fall into the trap of thinking that being a follower of Jesus, being a Christian, is kind of like an easy path for the rest of life. It makes our life easier. It's the panacea for all ills. But that's kind of not the way it works. Not in most of our experience, I would suggest. In fact, sometimes it's the opposite. Because it often means that when we're confronted with a situation and we think, what should we do? What should we think? How should we be? We have that whole other layer of faith come striking through that we need to think about as well. How do we follow the commands of Jesus in this? How do we work through such things as forgiveness and reconciliation and restoration? How do we treat this person who's treating us abysmally? How do we turn the other cheek? How do we show love? How do we walk the extra mile? How do I cope with the fact that my friend has got this terrible illness and I'm praying for healing and it doesn't come through? Is being a Christian easy? No, it's not. Is following Jesus easy? No, it's not. It's much easier in some ways, it seems to me, to not know Jesus at all and just live the way the rest of the world thinks. Because Jesus, the road that Jesus calls us to can be a hard road. He calls us to carry the cross. We constantly butt up against some radical teaching. But you know what? I would rather have Jesus in my life than not. I would rather have to think about those problems and those issues than not. Because Jesus is the way to eternal life. And Jesus showed how much he loved me by dying on a cross. So I want to follow him and I want to put God first. And that comes at a cost. So the question for all of us is this. Whether we acknowledge Jesus as the Son of God or are yet to, is are we prepared to do the hard stuff and walk alongside Jesus and carry the cross? I wonder how Simon felt. I wonder how many steps Simon took before he began to struggle with the cross. Presumably he was in better physical shape than Jesus. He hadn't been beaten. He hadn't been scourged. He hadn't been whipped within an inch of his life. So maybe he started off in a stronger way. But how long would it have been before Simon struggled under the weight of carrying the cross? How many steps did he take before his knees started to buckle? When we're in a difficult situation, how many steps do we take before our knees start to buckle? How many steps do we take before the situation we are in seems almost too hard to bear? I expect that many of us first encounter God and continue to do so in our weakness, in those times when we struggle, in those times when life doesn't seem fair, in those times when following Jesus just seems too hard to do, when things don't seem to be working out the way that we want them to. It's in those moments that he comes alongside us gently and tenderly, because Jesus experienced the same thing that we have and more. You see, sometimes people have this wrong image of God, that he sits above the world somehow, just looking down and not intervening, and waiting until we're strong enough to pull ourselves out of the mess that we're in. But that's not what God does. God becomes weak like ourselves so that he can lift us up. So my final thought on my final slide is simply this. On the day that Jesus met Simon and the centurion, he became weak so that you and I could become strong in him. Interesting, isn't it, how it works? Because that is completely the opposite of what many people will say today. It was in Jesus' weakness, it was in his intense vulnerability at that moment that he actually showed true strength and true strength and true power and true might. If Jesus hadn't become weak and he hadn't become vulnerable and he hadn't shared that pain and agony on the cross, there wouldn't have been the death, there wouldn't have been the resurrection, and there wouldn't have been the Jesus who is alive and with us today through his Holy Spirit.